I'm David Nacht, and welcome to the final Eurovision Sports Radio podcast for 2020. This has been a challenging year for all of us, and whilst it's important to keep sport in context, I want to take one last look at how broadcasters have excelled in their coverage over the past 9 months. In this episode, I want to rewind to October of this year and hear some of the stories shared by colleagues at the annual Eurovision Sport Radio Plenary. Let's start with the UEFA Champions League Final 8 in Portugal. Here's how the final match was covered on air.
The Champions League finale tussen Bayern München and Paris Saint-Germain.
Muito bem, vai começar esta final da Liga dos Campeões aqui em Lisboa.
E a final da Champions League, senhoras e senhores.
PSG Bayern München, c'est la finale.
C'est la finale della Coppa dei Campioni.
Es ist einer dieser historischen Abenden.
The teams kick off behind closed doors.
Rechte Seite mit Gnabry in die Mitte. Verlängerung von Müller. Chipball von Kimmich. Kopfball zu der Tor!
Pour la tête de Coman, c'est le but! L'ouverture! Pour Kingsley Coman!
Kingsley! Coman!
La tête, le but! Le but pour le Bayern!
Take the lead through Kingsley Coman.
Et le but de Kingsley Coman.
Kingsley Coman, 1-0 pour le Bayern Munich.
Ronaldo!
Most commentary was done off-tube with limited staff on site. But for journalists who did travel, what was the experience like? Taufik Khalil was on site in Lisbon for Germany's ARD.
I was very happy. I was a lucky guy from Germany. I think for a lot of people, I was maybe the most hated man in Germany because while I was there, ARD, German radio, where we sent two guys over, one following Leipzig and me following Bayern, having the best eight teams in Europe in one city, for me, it was great. It is something you should really consider to keep it because it was fantastic. The bad side, having the best eight teams in Europe, big clubs, and no fans in a beautiful city like Lisbon is spooky. It was every day I was there, they had on the Praça Dom Pedro in the center, they had this huge Champions League trophy, 10 meters high. And well, some people were running around there, but not what you expect. Maybe 10 fans from Paris, 5 from Bayern. That's it before a Champions League final. That was so sad. Around the stadium, UEFA did quite a good job, but it was all tough. It was tough to find your way inside the stadium. There were no signs where to get in. Everything was restricted. You have to be careful where to get in. Every morning, you need to get an email from UEFA, and this email told you you have to fill online, and you have to get your medical informations. And when you get that email, you were happy because you were on the list for the people who were supposed to enter the stadium on that day. I remember one day before the final, I didn't get that email. So I really get nervous. Finally, we managed to get it. And then inside the stadium, the same, running around, people who didn't know the way, where to go. You were caring because you were all on yourself. There were no technicians along with you. So I was not only the reporter, I was my own technician. So I was carrying a lot of heavy stuff around the stadium. And then the one guy sent me over there, the next guy sent me over there. After hours of climbing stairs and climbing down again, you found your spot. And then you were there in an empty stadium, a Champions League final. For me, crazy. And you know, when you cheer, everybody listens to you. So when we had this special match against Barcelona, which for me was the highlight of this three matches, the guys from Catalunya Radio, they were all sitting behind me. And before the match, they all started to warm up. And they do that very loud. And they start and say, go, 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 Messi, Messi, go, go, go. And I told them, hey, the match has not even been started. Wait. And then during the match, it was me who was saying, Tor for Bayern. And I said it 8 times. And well, it was quite funny because, you know, you knew everybody could listen to you.
You said you did a one-man show, but this is not how you would normally have covered a Champions League final, especially one featuring Bayern Munich.
No. Say we go to London, we had a team there of about, what, I don't know, 8, 9, 10 people, technicians taking care. When you get into the stadium, everything is set up. You have two reporters who do the 90 minutes. You will have one who does like me, who do the different stations within the ARD. You have a lot of people. And at that special night in London, we had more people because it was two German sites. If that would Bayern against Paris in Lisbon, without Corona, I would say there would be at least five people, three reporters, one story guy, and at least one technician. What we would like to do from Bayerischer Rundfunk, because we were in charge of the reporting, we would have liked to send two more reporters into Lisbon who do the 90 minutes full coverage. But UEFA restricted that, and they had to stay in Munich, and they did it off-tube from our studio. Of course, it would have been nicer for them. They were sitting there in front of a small screen and doing a Champions League final. You hear my colleague, André Ziems, and he was the guy in German who did that. And he did it very well off tube, but he said that it felt strange. And so, yeah, I think if especially when it's your team, when there's a German side, you want that three guys inside the stadium.
My thanks to Taufik from ARD. Another sporting great that wasn't going to be defeated by Corona was the Tour de France. It was covered on site by the likes of Radio France, who were the official broadcaster, as well as RTS in Switzerland, Czech Radio and RTV in Slovenia.
Tour de France, mesures sanitaires, une question d'image. C'est votre commentaire, Patrick Delétroit.
Le Tour devait se dérouler pour de très bonnes raisons. Des mesures sanitaires ont été décidées. Certaines sont logiques, comme la bulle dans laquelle vivent les coureurs. Le contact avec l'extérieur en dehors de la course est plus que limité.
France, on l'a dit, des traits particuliers. Quel impact sur votre organisation de travail?
Pour nous, c'est le fait de ne plus aller d'aller en fond de ligne, ce qu'on appelle donc juste à l'arrivée, et de là d'aller à la rencontre des coureurs qui finissent des étapes de montagne.
Usledoval ve Francii i náš reportér František Kuna teď ve vysílání. Dobrý den.
Příjemný večer.
Tak jak to vypadá? Pojede Roglič ve žlutém do Paříže nebo ne?
Nepojede. Celý cyklistický svět si troufnu říct, že je v šoku, protože Tadej Pogačar zvládl v časovce stáhnout minutovou ztrátu na Rogliče a ještě...
U zaključku današní etapy, ale Roglič, ale Hirče, ale Pogačar je na koncu zmagovalec. Prvo in drugo místo za slovenská kolesária, tudi Roglič je na koncu za centimetre premagal Marka Hiršija, ki ni imel torej dovolj
moči. Let's start off with Jérôme Cadet, the editor-in-chief at Radio France. Hello, Jérôme.
Hello.
It was a huge operation. Huh? You're the official radio of the Tour de France as well, Radio France. How many people did you have covering the event?
Six journalists, more technicians, I think 25 person on the whole Tour de France, but more on Nice for the start, because France Info make a special edition during 2 days. So maybe 10 persons from France Info were there. And then all days, each station of France Bleu send a journalist there. So more than 25 if we make the whole balance in all the tour.
And what was the experience for you like in general? How did you experience this Tour de France?
It was difficult to work, of course, but the feeling in the team was very good. You are living all together during 1 month, traveling in the country, eating in restaurants, moving each day. So a lot of risks with COVID, but the feeling and the relationship between the members of the team was good. And that was my first point. And the second point was to work to interview the riders, and it was possible. It was difficult. We have to go to the mix zone and not to the bus like before. Cycling is a world where freedom is very strong. You can go and see riders at the hotel or where you want. It was not the case on the Tour de France, but it was not like in Lisbon. We can see with material and with social distances, we can see the riders. It was not possible for football. So it was a good balance for us.
You said it was difficult, of course, to cover this event. What was the greatest difficulty, the greatest challenge you had to tackle?
the challenge was to have access to the riders to feel the race. When you have exchange with the riders, you know how they feel into the race, and it was more difficult this year because we have to make sound, and the riders are very good to express their feeling. They use good words, good expressions, and that was a sort of frustration for us. But I think we realize and we succeed in that purpose.
I heard from ASO 2 weeks ago in the sports assembly that they're thinking of maintaining this mixed zone setup that they've created at the start and the end of at each stage. Is that something that you as a radio would agree with, or would you in post-COVID times rather go back to the freedom, being around the buses, waiting for the riders when they cross the finish line?
If we stay in COVID times, this mixed zone is better than nothing, and it is better than other sports, you know, and cycling is better for us now than other sports. But if we consider non-COVID times, of course, it will be a fail for everyone, for us, but above all for cycling, because the exception of cycling is the fact that you're near the riders. It's the case for the journalists, but for the fans need to be on the road, near the road, and maybe cycling could lose a lot in that decision.
Okay, thank you, Géraud. Radio France obviously wasn't the only radio on site covering the Tour de France. Swiss Radio, RTS, was there as well. And I think we have Patrick Deltour with us.
Hello, everybody.
Yeah. Hello, Patrick. What was it like for you? I understand it was a last-minute confirmation for you to actually cover the event on site.
We got the Tour de France on the Wednesday, Tuesday evening. My boss said, okay, you can go. So we have all the hotels, all the organizations was made, but we don't know if we can go.
And how many did you actually send to the Tour de France, and what was the experience like for you?
I was alone with a technician, and I do the half of the Tour de France, and another journalist the second part. And I think it was, like Jérôme said, it was possible to work. The mixed zone is something that is not very, very good because there was a strict process. We have a box for us only, and that's not possible. Normally, the riders have to do one interview, a second one, so in each box, and it's not possible. So we fight sometimes with the organization to say, okay, we have all the microphone, we are three in the box, where is the problem? We have all the masks, and the rider had the mask, and we can do only one interview and not three interview. It's better for the riders. What is special too is that we have more to work with the press officer to have some interviews maybe late at night with WhatsApp or something like that. That's sometimes good because we have a good relation, but it's a problem. It's a problem. We don't have this free possibility to access to the riders, like said Jérôme. And another problem, because I read yesterday the specific organization of the FIS, the International Ski Federation, for the winter, and I found in this paper, they say all microphones should have a plastic cover over the foam that is replaced after each interview. The Tour de France, it was so in the Tour de France, and it's just impossible for organizational reason. And I know that a virus don't jump from the microphone to the face. No, and I say at the FIS, I send an email at the FIS. And I say that, and 5 minutes later, an answer. Okay, thank you for this remark. Thank you. We will change this. And I think it's important for us to talk with the organizer to say, okay, for our job, We can do that. It's impossible to do that. Okay for the mask. Okay for all the things. But something we have to say to the organizer that it's not possible because they don't know really what is our work and how we can work. Very well.
Thank you, Patrick. You raised some great issues. Finally, to conclude the part on the Tour de France, we have to invite the winners, of course. Slovenian radio, Val 202, who celebrated the first Slovenian win with Pogacar. And Bostian is with us from Val 202.
It was not my debut. It's second-hand information because Igor Tuminets was there. Igor is right now on his way to Selden. I just tried to express his thoughts on Tour de France, but it was really great, especially because we have two riders in front, not just Pogacar, also Primož Roglič, who was maybe even bigger favorite at the very end, but it happens that Pogacar wins the Tour. But it was, yes, great Tour de France for Radio Slovenia. We were there almost all the time with two or three persons, and we managed to do a really, really great job on a social. We didn't manage audiograms, we managed videograms, so we get from on-air live coverage for the commentator and then connected with the videos from sites, and that was a really, really great success. And it was in this way really nice to work because the journalists who were filming with and do it for the social, they can get anywhere they want. So the problem was only with mix zones and a little bit with the journalists who managed to do the commentating and who managed to do stories. Igor had some problems also in the press centers, but they already discussed it on site.
And it's a new sport, obviously, for Slovenia, relatively new cycling. What has the feedback been from your audiences on your coverage?
Yeah, it was fantastic. We finished it with auction for a yellow jersey of Tadej Pogacar. It stops in 47,000 euros, so it was a great success also with this point of view. And we do it for young talents. It was all around Slovenia, not just listening on radio, also watching the television and especially social. This was a really, really big moment for us to manage our social video production, also all the other things connected with the on-air program, with the social, and there was a really, really big success. And now, you know, Slovenia has 2 million people. It's a small country, and some of those videos manage more than 100,000 views. So it's a really, really big audience for the Slovenians, from the Slovenian point of view.
Thank you to Bostian from RTV Slovenia. After the Tour de France, a lot of the same journalists turned their attention to the UCI World Championships. With quarantine rules in place, some were forced to cover this event off-tube. Here's Fanny Lechevestrier commentating from her apartment for Radio France.
Il n'en peut plus, il est cuit, mais il va le faire. Oui, le premier français champion du monde. Yeah, il y croit, il a enfin lâché les mains du guidon. Il lève les bras, il se prend la tête entre les mains. Il n'en peut plus, il l'a fait, Julien Alaphilippe, le voilà. Le premier champion du monde français depuis 1997.
What was it like for you to do this commentary on a big event with a French rider, also winning, becoming world champion?
It's complicated at the start. You are going to comment a race from your home, but with the help of an engineer of EBU, Eurovision, present at Imola, and a technician from Radio France, we remotely first installed the software we needed on my computers. On the first computer, Radio Tour, and on the other, the international signal. Along the day, I was about to join the Italian songs from the finish line. It allows to have more serious information of the race and to be a little in the mood of the race. I was also able to record very easily the first interview of Julian Alaphilippe on the international signal. So it's practical, but at first it's very complicated, and little by little you get caught in the game, and at the end, like you can hear with this race, so you forget, yes, you are on your coach to comment.
Yes, but I think you will agree, in general, it's still better to be on site in Imola in this case. Why is that the case in cycling? Because somebody could say all you do there is watch the screen as well and do commentary, which you did at home as well. Now, why is it still better to be there where the action is happening?
To see emotion, to see the first reaction, to I have the screen in my own, but it's different. So we save the race, we've comment the race, but after it's a problem not to be here.
What did your neighbors say? Did you get any knock on the door?
I don't know. I didn't say anything after the race.
One of the big tennis tournaments that went ahead was Roland Garros. As Pam Melbourne from the BBC explains, they took a hybrid approach to coverage from Paris, with a reporter on site and commentators at home.
Obviously, we in the UK have a quarantine rule if we go to France and many other, frankly, every other place, it seems, in the world at the moment. So we were left in a situation where we had the rights. We normally send quite a big deployment to Paris. Editorially, it was very significant because of Andy Murray's continued return from his long-standing hip injury. We were going to get charged an absolute fortune to receive anything other than the main world feed. And unfortunately, British tennis on clay isn't the best. So if we had a situation where Andy Murray was out on the outside court and let's say had a significant issue to his hip again, editorially, we wouldn't be able to see those pictures. So with working with health and safety, and our correspondent, Russell Fuller, committed that he was happy to travel to Paris and therefore self-isolate on his return from Paris, which is no small feat, bearing in mind Russell has obviously a wife and three children at home. So we took out our usual position on the Philippe Chatrier court, where Russell went, and that meant that Russell therefore would have access to all of the outside courts in Paris. The rest of the commentary team remained in our off tube that we've built in Salford, where we can have up to four broadcasters. Therefore, we had a strange situation where Russell would commentate from the pictures that he could see, and the team back in Salford were working off the UK television rights holders off-air feed. Approximately that was 15 to 20 seconds behind what Russell was actually commentating. Incredibly, they did a brilliant job. We just had to adjust our style. But, you know, when you go to Judy Murray to summarise the point that Russell's commented just on, you have to appreciate she is just watching that shot live, therefore, and is able to react accordingly. So it worked actually incredibly well. It was a really useful exercise for us because I think it means now in the future that where editorially we feel we should be on site, but we can only send one person, we have now potentially another option. But I just want to stress the reason we went down that route was because financially it was going to be impossible for us without Russell agreeing to do that, to actually do our usual Roland Garros level of coverage.
My thanks to Pam and all of the other contributors to this episode. Our final look at how broadcasters have succeeded in delivering their usual high-quality sports coverage during this pandemic. We'll now draw a line under 2020 and look forward to brighter days in the new year. Wishing all of you a peaceful and hopefully restful Christmas, and see you bright and fresh for 2021.